Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening?
Science isn't about facts. It's about what we want you to believe.
Somebody tell me!
Welcome to Simple Facts of Life Radio, where we're in the midst of our great national debate. You know, kind of saddens me to see that what we seem to be debating, in essence, is the value of personal liberty, personal responsibility, and personal accountability. And as you might guess, as far as I'm concerned, that's not a subject that's up for debate. I am, as always, your host, the Chief, coming to you from the proverbial hidden bunker in an undisclosed location somewhere in the vicinity of Portland, Oregon. And if you'd like to join the show, the number here, as always, is 949-272-9588. Now, today, so I don't have as many notes as I usually do, in case I happen to sound a little more Joe Biden-esque than normal, but interestingly enough, I do have more notes than Judge Amy Coney Barrett had this morning for her Senate confirmation hearing. I don't know if you saw that. It was kind of a interesting thing. It was obviously a setup. Senator Cornyn from Texas asked her, and he must have seen this, it was a setup. He asked her to, he mentioned that, well, we have people show up with a lot of notes and papers and things. What do you have in front of you? She merely held up her little notepad that they had left for her. It was blank. She showed up with zero notes at all and made her look pretty impressive, I guess. But like I say, it was a bit of a setup. I did not watch the debate or the hearings, rather. And so, you know, I did see some snippets of them. And one thing that I came away with, and I realize that I'm showing my age here. Yes, Judge Barrett looks kind of young to me, but then again, I guess anybody whose name isn't Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders or Maxine Waters, they're going to look young to me. You know, it's just kind of the way it is, right? But when I saw her, when President Trump introduced her and she gave her nice little pre-prepared speech, you know, accepting the nomination and all that sort of thing, you know, she sounded very good. But listening to her talk off the cuff, what struck me is she sounded a whole lot like a Valley girl. You know, well, what we're talking about is the Constitution, and I would interpret things not according to my personal belief, but according to what the Constitution says. Yeah, that's kind of what I got from it. So it just struck me as, I must be an old guy. I don't know. Like, I'm going to be on the Supreme Court. Oh, my God. Gag me with a spoon. Okay. Nonetheless, a few things I did sort of talk about. Like I said, I don't have a whole lot of notes because, as often happens, right after I get off the air here, I see a few things, and then I go through the whole week knowing exactly what I want to talk about. And then I have the whole week to think about it and try to remember things. So what I wanted to talk about was, first off, were the debates that we had in the last couple weeks, the presidential debate, and then just last Wednesday, the vice presidential debate. Interestingly enough, it seems that the Commission on Presidential Debates, they tried to change the rules because, you know, I don't know, Joe Biden didn't look good, so they could use the excuse of coronavirus to try to make it a virtual debate so that Joe Biden wouldn't get flustered or anything. President Trump did not like the idea. He said no, he was only going to do a regular format debate as of the variety that he had agreed on and Joe Biden had agreed on. And so the commission just canceled the debate. Yeah. No bias there, right? Yeah, okay. So let's think about this. Let me. What did we see at these debates? Now, besides, I mean, the big story from the whole thing, of course, was the moderators. Well, the fly was the big story, but the moderators. Now, I didn't even look up her name. The woman from USA Today. I'm not very good with names. But she was the moderator of the vice presidential debate. I think she seemed a little less biased than Chris Wallace did at the presidential debate, but she was still biased. Now, Chris Wallace, his performance, a day before, 2 days before the debate that he moderated, somebody suggested that what he really should do was that show Joe Biden that he was right to duck him, to refuse to appear on his Fox News Sunday or whatever the name of that show is that he hosts. Well, he didn't do that. He basically, his performance in the debate to me sounded like he was basically trying to invite, pleading with Joe Biden to come on his TV show. That's why he was appearing to be less than unbiased. That's what it looked like to me. But, okay, there it is. So back to the vice presidential debate. The moderator there, she seemed a little less unbiased, but nonetheless, it was a little easier. There wasn't a lot of interrupting, a lot of screaming, shouting, name-calling like we saw in the debate a week earlier. But it was pretty obvious, at least to me, and maybe, you know, I'm like everybody else. I'm looking at things through biased eyes. I can't claim to be impartial in what I saw, what I wanted to see. In the immortal words of Paul Simon from the Simon and Garfunkel song, The Boxer, a man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. So I looked at it through biased eyes, heard it through biased ears. Nonetheless, being as objective as I possibly could, it appeared to me that the questions asked to Senator Harris were basically softball questions. She didn't get anything hard. There were questions framed in such a way as to elicit the kind of responses that Senator Harris wanted to let her basically answer the questions by reciting her talking points. That's what I saw. I was not impressed. And so I gave a little thought to it. Now, we're supposed to have one, maybe two more, supposed to be two, we don't know, but more presidential debates. Here's what I would like to see. And I think, I don't know, let me know, what I think the American people would like to see. Format of the debate should be totally different. It should cut out the moderator completely, other than as basically a timekeeper. Introduce, you know, give the opening introductory statements, welcome to wherever the hell we are, and, you know, these are the people, and this is what we're doing, and that. And then I, especially based on what we saw in the presidential debate, I have no problem with the moderator being the timekeeper and having a switch to turn off the microphone if somebody talks too long. Now, there should be a clock which the candidates can see, the audience can see, the moderator can see. Okay, this is how much time you have left. And, of course, it shouldn't be automatic. The moderator should not cut off anybody in mid-syllable, you know. If the guy seems to be finishing a sentence, you know, at the end of the time, let him finish the sentence. But if he tries to go on, say, sorry, click. I think that would be good, and there would be no interruptions. The candidates could speak their piece, and then the other candidate can respond. But here's what I really want to see. Remember, in both debates, in the opening statement, both the moderators said, nobody has seen the questions except me. I wrote the questions. Now, here's what I want to see. Number one, let the candidates show up, and I'm talking both of them, President Trump, former Vice President Biden, show up, nothing electronic, but paper, as much notes as they want to bring. And here's the reason. I do not want the moderator to ask any questions. I want to have, you know, flip a coin, who starts? I want one candidate to have, say, 30 seconds to ask the other candidate a question. You know, I think 30 seconds is probably long enough to frame a question. And then the other candidate gets 2 minutes to answer the question. Then the first candidate who asks the question gets 1 minute to respond to the answer. Then the other candidate gets 30 seconds to ask a question. And it goes on like that. And the moderator simply keeps time. I think it would be better for the candidates, and especially better for the American people, if the candidates had their opponent answer the question that they wanted answered. All the questions, of course, would be skewed what the answer is. And that's why I say they should have paper. Have your pre-prepared questions. Have your people anticipate the questions and have a little index. Okay, this is my answer to that question. I have no problem with that. You don't know what you're going to be asked, but you can kind of anticipate. But I think that would get a lot more information and of the kind that people want. Now, my advice for the candidates, particularly President Trump, I'm not going to give a whole lot of advice to Mr. Biden, however, he can take this because it applies to him too. If you're in a situation like that, rule number one, 2, 3, and 4, it's all the same rule. Answer the damn question. Don't just ignore the question. Go on, say what you want. Answer the first and foremost, answer the question. President Trump says, well, there's been a lot of talk about packing the Supreme Court, yada, yada, yada. What's your stand on this? If such a law comes before you, will you sign it or will you veto it? Make Joe Biden answer that question. And if he doesn't, then you got a minute to say, I asked the vice president a simple question and he refused to answer it. Says a lot, doesn't it? But, of course, that means if you don't want the same thing thrown back in your face, you have to answer the question. Whatever question is asked. I don't know that Joe Biden, he'll have his questions, and hopefully he'll even be able to read whatever the people wrote for him, because I doubt if he'll write a whole lot of it himself. And I'm sure President Trump would have people help him write his questions. And, of course, you don't have to answer. You can ask. You can, when your time comes to ask a question, you can continue on with a follow-up to your previous question if you want. You can ad lib. It's all open. But the key is you ask your question. You say what you think the people of America want to hear the other candidate say, what questions you think they want answered. And the kind of questions you ask says as much about you as the kind of answers you give. So that's the kind of debate I would like to see. I don't know anybody, Tim, if you have any thoughts on that, put in the chat room. Stephen, if you have any thoughts on that, push the button, you know what to do. I'm just, I think that would be a much better debate. So that's all there is to that. So I want to move on to something else I saw. All right, this is one of those things I saw right after the last story. It's an article I saw in Town Hall, and it was written by Dennis Prager. Does the Prager University radio talk show host. Writes a lot of interesting stuff. But I thought this really struck me because it was about who do you vote for? Do you vote for the person? If, say, you're a kind of directing this at the Never Trump Republicans. I'd agree with what President Trump's policy is, but they just don't like him because he's icky, or they disagree with this, that, or whatever. And I got to think about the points he made. They were really good because, see, I've voted for the person and not the party. I confess. I've voted for Democrats, not recently, not many, but I have. And I thought about what it was that made me vote for these people. And it became either because I thought the person, even if I didn't agree with them completely, was a good person, or maybe I liked, I'll tell you a little story, maybe probably the last time I remember voting for a Democrat, it was, quite a few years back, several, in the United States Senate election. I voted for our Democratic Senator Ron Wyden. He won that election with like 70% of the vote, by the by. But there are a lot of things I disagreed with him on. But there was one thing, and it was kind of the weirdest thing. I'm sure I've talked about this before here, but back in the early days of the Bush administration, an issue came up, and it was a states' rights issue. Specifically, it had to do with something that had happened before I even moved to Oregon, I guess. But we have this law in the state of Oregon. It was the first in the nation, maybe among the first in the world, that allows for doctor-assisted suicide. Now, I'm not a big fan of that, but I have no strong feelings. I mean, as you all know, what I am a big fan of is personal liberty, personal responsibility, and personal accountability. And, you know, the choice to end your own life is probably embodies that more than anything else. So, but the history of it is this was put on the ballot in the state of Oregon, again, before I was here, by an initiative process. And I don't think anybody took it too seriously, except it passed. Now, the legislature went apoplectic about this, and they almost immediately, like for the next election, put a measure on the ballot to repeal it, because I believe state law says that the legislature cannot repeal a law passed by the people. Well, that measure to repeal it failed by a larger margin than the original initiative passed. So it's still on the books. Fast forward to the Bush administration. I think this happened during the Clinton administration. Fast forward to the Bush administration, Attorney General John Ashcroft tried to do an end run around this by threatening to remove FDA or DEA laws that allowed doctors to prescribe controlled substances if they did any of this. And Senator Wyden stood very tall in defense of the state of Oregon's law because he's a senator. He doesn't represent the people. He represents the state. And so, therefore, he stood tall in defense of the state against federal encroachment on states' rights. I was very impressed with this, particularly since Senator Wyden was on record as being opposed to the law personally. Our other senator, who happened to be a Republican, would not stand with Senator Wyden. Now, I'm sure that both of them were probably just doing this as a partisan thing. But nonetheless, Senator Wyden like almost stood completely alone in the Senate to filibuster the measure and you know, allowing the Attorney General to do what he was trying to do. And that impressed me so much, just his devotion to the laws of our state, that I voted for him. I'm not sure that was such a good idea, because since then he's done a lot that I really disagree with and would not vote for him. I did not vote for him the last time he ran. But here's the point. Even if you don't like President Trump, what he's doing, and you think Joe Biden's a fine guy, or the case of a congressman, well, if your congressman is a Democrat, or if your congressman's a Republican, but they're kind of icky, and you agree, and maybe you kind of agree with what the kind of agenda you think they are going to put, they're icky, so you vote for the other person who you think is a better person. Is that going to be good for you? if you, you know, do you believe that a, if you say you're pro-life, Joe Biden is a Catholic, that kind of, if he's at all not being totally hypocritical about that, that kind of makes him personally pro-life, one would think. So therefore, you might want to vote for him. But do you really think that Joe Biden would support a pro-life agenda? Or Nancy Pelosi, another practicing Catholic, so she likes to claim, would they support a pro-life agenda? No, because they're going to do what their party says. And that's kind of the way it is. And I mean, any issue, taxes, whatever. If you agree, you don't have to like President Trump or any other candidate. If that candidate has a record, such as our president does, of doing this, what you know what he stands for, policy-wise, the way he's governed. If you agree with that, it really, that's what you got for the last 4 years. And if he's reelected, that's what you're likely to get in the next 4 years. If you think he's, that's what you want, or if, then maybe forget how icky you think he is. Because you know that a President Biden and a Democratic Congress, you know what they're going to do. And I'll take a whole bunch of really icky people who do the right thing over a whole bunch of sweetie pies that are going to ruin this country. And that's my simple fact of life. Okay. Getting to our, I'm babbling on. So there's one little other detail I want to mention here, you know, in the last couple minutes here. Something really amazing and bizarre happened a couple days ago, which is I actually put something on my blog post, my written blog. There is a link to it at the bottom of the show description. It's one of those weird things. I'm not going to say exactly, I don't have time to go over the entire thing, but it's sort of a revisiting one of my themes from the election 4 years ago, and I was sort of going full Alex Jones here, some evil conspiracy theory and all that, and yeah, I did make a note. You could take this as seriously or as not seriously as you want to. I said it was written for entertainment purposes only, but you know, I didn't see. I was sort of, what I was writing about was when Nancy Pelosi said she was going to talk about the 25th Amendment, and then the next day she came up, you know, with that little section of the 25th Amendment on the poster and all that, and something started clicking with me. And so, you know, if you try to connect the dots, I guess you can connect them in, you know, those old pictures we all played with as a kid where you connect the dots and you draw a picture of a bird. Or if you can, maybe if you connect them in the other order, you'll end up with a picture of a horse. Well, I connected the dots, and I came up with a picture of Godzilla. So that's where I am on that. And I am out. Read the article, and I'm out of time. Till next time.